I would like to now call on His Worship Mayor Tom Good for the official welcome. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Honored guest, members of Parliament, Mr. Leon Ladner, and his former campaign manager, Mr. Howard Green, Honorable Howard Green, Delta senior citizens, and fellow liberals. When it was mentioned tonight that John thought he was taking offense to me by saying that John Reynolds should be the Member of Parliament for many years, I said to my wife, I have no objection whatsoever to John Reynolds being a Member of Parliament, as long as he does not run for Mayor of Delta. Ladies and gentlemen, it falls upon me the honor this evening to welcome to Delta a great Canadian. But I don't think that any words that I could say here tonight would match the love and respect that the Right Honorable Member received today by the citizens of Delta. Wherever you went with the Right Honorable Member, old, young, families stood in line to talk to him for a moment, to say a few words about relatives back in Saskatchewan. And I don't know what makes a great Canadian, but I do know this, that the man sitting next to me has whatever it takes. However, he is a conservative, and I must take exception to one of the recent remarks that he made in Vancouver. Speaking to the Canadian Club, he mentioned that he was the only living former Prime Minister of Canada. However, he went on to add to those gathered there that he felt he was soon to be joined by one other. I think the only difference of opinion we might have is the time in which that person joins the ranks. Sir, it is a privilege for me as the Mayor of Delta, not only having to serve with you for 4.5 years in the House of Commons, but to welcome you on behalf of the citizens of Delta to our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor Tom Good. I would like to now call on our Member of Parliament, Mr. John Reynolds, to introduce some special guests. Please, John.
Thank you, John. You can be assured, Tom, I'm not going to run for mayor, at least for a couple of more elections. It's my pleasure tonight to introduce a few people in the audience, and when I look around, there's so many we could introduce, but we just don't have the time. But there's some people here that I would like everybody to meet. The first man is a man who's helped us in organizing this dinner, worked untiringly helping us do it. He's a man who's been one of Mr. Diefenbaker's friends for many, many years, Mr. Lyle Jessley of Vancouver. Lyle, please stand up and take a bow. The next man is a man who Mr. Diefenbaker spoke about last night in White Rock. And certainly, I'd heard about him a lot of times before in Ottawa when I've had the pleasure of sitting in Mr. Diefenbaker's office. This man was Mr. Diefenbaker's campaign manager in Prince Albert, and he tells us that he wouldn't have been prime minister if it hadn't been for this man, so we owe him a great deal of gratitude. Fred Hadley, who's now living in White Rock, would you please stand up and take a bow? We have a man sitting in the audience who was a member of Parliament for Burrard and Mr. Diefenbaker's administration, John Taylor. Would you please take a bow? And lastly, we've got a man in the audience who tells me he still shoots his golf score at the same age he is. He's a member of Hockey's Hall of Fame. He was a Citizen of the Year in Vancouver in 1966. He played on the last Stanley Cup hockey winner in Vancouver. That's a long time ago. Mr. Cyclone Taylor, please take a bow. And now I'd like to call on my colleague in Ottawa, Mr. Ben O'Friesen, to introduce our honored guest.
Mr. Chairman, members of the head table, and friends, I feel doubly privileged tonight to have this honor, because this is the second night in a row that I have the privilege of introducing our guest of honor. I first heard the name of John Diefenbaker in Rostern, Saskatchewan, as a young boy, when the men after the noon dinner on Sunday used to gather in the parlor. In those days, there were no such things as living rooms or dens. There were always parlors. And the men used to gather there and discuss politics in Low German in our household. And they used to speak in somewhat rather hushed tones, the name of John Diefenbaker. And then in 20 or 30 years later, I was attending Northwestern University in Chicago, and it was pretty hard to get news from Canada in those days. And I did hear of the election in 1958 and the Diefenbaker sweep, and the Americans couldn't even pronounce the name, much less understand the man. And then last night, we had the privilege of having Mr. Diefenbaker in White Rock, and I saw again the degree to which he has won the hearts of Canadians of all ages. And some wonder why he has been able to do this or how he has been able to do this. And I suppose the easiest way to say it is because of his wit and his wisdom. And it's impossible to hear Mr. Diefenbaker speak without hearing his wit. Just the day before yesterday, I was traveling on a bus with Senator Eugene Forsyth. We were going to a reception, and he regaled me all the way with stories that Mr. Diefenbaker had told him, and I just have to share one. He was telling about the time that one of our colleagues in the House of Commons should have been making a statement about a crisis that the government was facing, and Mr. Diefenbaker naturally was very perturbed that the Liberals were not being harangued by the opposition at this time. And he said, imagine, he should be making a statement. And what's he doing? He's taking a two-week French immersion course. And then he leaned back, and with a gleam in his eye, he said, now, we Baptists know all about immersion. But we have the good sense of coming up long before 2 weeks. But even more than his wit, it is his wisdom that has won the hearts of Canadian people. The kind of wisdom that avoids the smart alecky and the smart kind of wisdom that we are sometimes attracted to. He had the wisdom, most of all, to stay with the people and to avoid the pitfall of electronics and the magic that electronics holds for some people. And when I think of Mr. Diefenbaker, we could pile on and multiply the superlatives. But when we reduce it to the most necessary essentials, we must say he is a man. Take him for all in all, we shall not see the like again. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you our friend, companion of honor, our former Prime Minister, the Right Honorable John George Diefenbaker.
Busy life. The last couple of days have been no exception. Every hour on the hour, I've had to make a speech. And there is nothing more difficult for those like myself, unaccustomed in so doing. And I, in all seriousness, I've had a very happy time. Beyond words to express what it has meant to me. As the heart of your people here, Mr. Mayor, has been poured out to me. I'm sometimes told there are no rewards in politics. I've seen the heights. I've seen the depths. But if I had my life to live over again, and I'm just starting on the second section, I would follow the course that I have. And it didn't come easy. In the city of Moncton, when those who preceded me were virtually howled down, it was in 1965, and sitting up in front of me, below the platform, was a lady who was the head of the Truth Squad, an organization set up for the purpose of assuring that any deviation by me from the truth would be punished by publicity. Well, I got silence when I got up to speak. I reminded them of what took place only a few weeks before Sir John Macdonald died in the campaign of 1891. And he was speaking in Smith Falls, ill, facing death, still indomitable. It was a noisy meeting. For those who preceded him, when he rose to speak, suddenly he was given assistance by a great big Irish Canadian of the Ottawa Valley variety, than which there is no witcher. And he said, let's have order here. Let us not have disagreeable occurrences such as have taken place here this evening. Let us hear what he has to say. Tall man with an imposing stature, a sonorous voice, and the appearance of authority. Silence came over the meeting. And Sir John said, I just want to thank you, my friend, for bringing about such unusually good order. From the back there came that loud voice. He said, Sir John, don't think I'm going to support you. I wouldn't vote for you if you were the angel Gabriel. Sir John said, you're right again. You wouldn't be in my constituency. Well, now then. Well, at this meeting in Moncton, one of the outstanding interrupters had a high-pitched falsetto voice. He could be heard above everyone. And as I got up to speak, when I finally got silence, he said, give him hell, John, just in a contemptuous way. I said, my friend, I don't do that. I just tell the truth, and it sounds like that. And this is a wonderful occasion. I'm deeply grateful to Tom Good for his very generous words. Former colleague in the House of Commons, he and his father before him. I was very deeply touched this afternoon, and again this evening, by your presence. It means a great deal in the building of that spirit in Canada which is necessary above all things, that while we may disagree in regard to the means whereby the greatness of our future will be assured, at the same time, never forget the fact that those who do not disagree with you are good Canadians, are to be treated as such. The essence of democracy is the right to disagree. And as an aside, may I say it's very happy that I had as my friend to introduce me, Benno Friesen. It's wonderful to bring with one's own introducer. You're assured of an objectivity that could not otherwise be attained. And when coupled therewith, my friend John Reynolds, you have had the full story in truth and in fact. The only regret I have this evening is that my wife isn't with me. And at the expense of referring to something I've already referred to, Olive has been with me in victory and in defeat. And we have quite a system. She's a major advisor, and I'm a major acceptor of her advice. And that brings about a state of equanimity that can't be gained under any other circumstances. And as I said on a previous occasion, we have grace in our home, and I usually say it. And about a year ago, I said to her one morning, Olive, would you say grace this morning? She bowed her head. She raised her head. I said, I didn't hear what you were saying. She said, I wasn't speaking to you. Well, all I can tell you is this. As I was about to say a moment ago, that the rewards of public life cannot be estimated in monetary gain, but there is no satisfaction to equal that of one's fellow Canadians, many of whom disagreed with the views that I expressed in past years, and today, in the light of events, no longer take that position. And that's the essence of leadership. Not being popular, but leading. And of course, the outstanding example of that, without whose magnificent and indomitable will you and I would not be here tonight. Winston Churchill. Through the years, passing through the valley of humiliation, if I might borrow an expression from a former Prime Minister of Canada, Mr. King, Churchill went through that. I saw him in the dark days of 1916. Came to the gallery of the House of Commons. He who had accepted and administered the greatest state positions was in disgrace over Gallipoli. History has proven it. It wasn't his responsibility. It was not properly carried out, or he would have achieved immortality then. I saw him again in 1936 when he endeavored to mobilize the king's men behind Edward VIII so that Edward could marry Mrs. Simpson. The House of Commons jeered him, ridiculed him, held him up to contempt. I saw him again from the gallery of the House of Commons in 1938 when he was the voice of freedom unlistened to, warning of the tremendous danger to freedom that Hitler, by his conduct, would bring about sooner or later. I met him first 2 or 3 days after the fall of Singapore, and the sinking of the Pacific Fleet. One of four or five Canadian members of Parliament, and I said to him, Prime Minister, the first time I saw you, you were in disgrace. And he said, will you say that again? I did. He said, which time was that? Spirit, an unfathomable spirit, the capacity to elevate people, recognition of the great things of life, of the unchangeability of freedom, a voice in the wilderness for so long. And he had that unusual capacity, the ability to turn to humor, devastating the power of language. I recall on one occasion him saying this about the ups and downs of politics. He said, when the war ended in Europe, the king offered me the Order of the Garter. He didn't call it that. He said he offered me the garter. I turned it down. 3 months later, the people gave me the boot. An inimitable power of language and the ability to take those ups and downs which necessarily follow all of us who participate in public life. And I'll tell you one more thing to illustrate what he's like. I was out there on one occasion a very few months before he died. He had with him his dog and his cat. And away he goes and shows me the pool that he made and the wall for which he had such unusual expertness that he became a member of the union, the Builders Union. There were various birds on the pool, and he called one by one name and another. And then there was a frightful looking monstrosity. He said, come here, Adolf. I said, you like animals? Oh, yes. What animals do you like best? He said, I like dogs. They're so faithful. They give one an experience that those in public life do not always have, that loyalty and devotion. He said, do you like cats? And I said, I don't. He said, I do. Why do you like cats? He said, because there are various reasons, but because they're independent. Any other animals you like, Sir Winston? He said, I like hogs. That'll be something here, Mr. President, in this agricultural area. I like hogs. I said, why? They treat you as equals. Well,